This Shadrick sighting features a full visit with Vito Stellino, the Hall of Fame sports writer with the Florida Times Union. A portion of this interview aired on the Public's Tailgate Show on Jaguars Radio before the preseason Week 1 game between the Steelers and Jaguars. This is the full 20-plus minute visit in its entirety. And as always, use hashtag Shadrick sighting on Twitter to react. Hope you enjoy.
We're visiting with Florida Times Union writer Vito Stellino, the 1989 Dick McCann Award winner, the writer's wing of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Vito, it's good to have you. Thanks for coming on, first off.
Oh, it's always good to be here.
Always? We haven't had you before, Vito.
Okay, first time is good, too.
We chat on the practice field a lot, and a few weeks ago we talked about, I asked you how long it's been in the league for you. 50 years, is that right?
I guess this starts the 51st, but yeah, started in 63 in Detroit, spent a couple of years in the Army, and then 66 through today, been in New York, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, now here, so kind of moved around.
Did you ever imagine when you started in Detroit and then went to the Army and then got out of the Army in New York that you'd be doing it this long? Did you imagine 2015?
Well, you know, when you're in your 20s, you never think that far ahead.
Yeah.
So, it's almost hard to believe looking back. And it's gone by so fast. That's the amazing thing. I mean, I can remember stuff like it was yesterday. It doesn't seem that long, you know. So, but I've enjoyed it, so that's all you can ask for.
Let's go back to a couple of the older stories, maybe from the Detroit UPI days or even in the New York UPI days. Any memorable NFL story stand out? What was your first big NFL story?
Well, the first big one was the Alex Carr suspension along with Paul Hornung, you know, for gambling in like March of 63. I was only on the job a couple months, and I was assigned to get Karras's reaction. So they gave me his address. And of course, there's no cell phones. So I had to drive close by, stop, call on a payphone to find out what happened. You know, and they said he'd been suspended. So I drove to his house, and it wasn't like Marsh Landing. It was just a row of little bungalows. I mean, you know, he was like making what, $35,000, if that, those days, you know. And this woman comes to the door, his first wife, and she's obviously been crying. And this little kid hanging on her, you know, half of her dress. I mean, women wore dresses during the day in those days. And he'd already left. So I went back to the Lion headquarters. He was there. And he gave the memorable quote, I could go back to, he was one of the steel towns. And he said, yeah, I'd go back there and get all the steel I could eat. That was one of his memorable quotes. But yeah, but that was, as I say, I'd just been on the job a short time. I was 21 years old. That was an amazing beginning.
Then you went to the Army for 2 years.
Yeah.
After writing for a year. Was that, did you like going to the Army? Was that your choice or were you kind
no,
of?
No, in those days I had a draft.
Yeah.
You know, and I had been too slow in trying to get into a National Guard unit. That, in those days, the National Guard, 6 months, and then you go, you know, once a week or 2 weeks in the summer. So I just got drafted. But I lucked out. I went to the, had a friend who knew somebody who had a general at the Army War College. That's where they, colonels go to kind of prepare to be generals. So I didn't have a top secret security clearance. The general was very publicity conscious, so I was in their PIO department.
Right.
So I was there for over a year. And so it wasn't like a normal Army experience because most of the people are, you know, colonels and stuff, so they didn't care. It wasn't like the enlisted men being harassed. In fact, I played tennis with a colonel's wife, which in a normal Army base would be unheard of for a private kind of fraternizing with a colonel's wife, you know, that type of thing. So, but anyway, and the big thing was in 65, Vietnam was starting to heat up, and the generals wanted to keep everybody who was already in, extend their tours. And then I could have been heading to Vietnam. But Lyndon Johnson wanted to kind of fight the war on the sly. The baby boomers were just coming of age, so they had an inexhaustible supply of people. So he just bumped up the draft calls. I got out of January 66. And back to the sports world and been here ever since.
Yeah, back to New York with the UPI after that. Most folks know you're writing from Pittsburgh with the Post-Gazette because at that time from 74 to 81, that's when the Steelers won four Super Bowls, when you were the beat writer for the Post-Gazette. A lot of memories, of course, then, but take us through, why were those teams so successful and so successful for so long in Pittsburgh?
Well, to start with, you had nine Hall of Famers. You can't duplicate that day, and you had no free agency. So the team stayed together, and you have a great coach, Chuck Doe, a great owner of the Rudys, a lot of stability, and they weren't making the money that they make today. Not that I regret it. Hey, the price they pay, I wouldn't play myself. I think they paid too big a price, the concussions and all that. But because they weren't making a lot of money, winning was really important to those guys. And so if they lost, which they rarely did, against losing teams, they had something like a 50-1 record. They lost one game to Cincinnati to a team that finished below 500. I mean, they were focused. They didn't blow games. You know, they would lose to Oakland on occasion and Dallas or, you know, the good teams, but they didn't blow games. But anyway, so if they lost and you were critical, they were fine. They didn't like it when you won 14-6. They won 14-6. You're like, yeah, not a very good showing. They figured, hey, they won. That's all that counted. But one day, I've heard the story. Obviously, I wasn't there. They're taking a bus back from Cleveland because they often didn't fly there. It was so close, and they lost. And somebody says, what's Vito going to say about this? Because I had, like, I mean, you could see how good they were. And, like, when they won the first two, I immediately started saying, hey, the bar is Green Bay. They won five of them, although they only won 10, had to win 10 playoff games because there are fewer playoff games. But I said, you at least got to win three to be great. And they kind of didn't like that. Then they had a couple off years. They went to Oakland without Rocky and Franco both hurt. They lose that playoff game. The next year, they had a lot of holdouts and stuff. And then in 78, they got back on track. They won the third one and the fourth one. After the third one, I said, okay, now you're up there, that type of thing.
Why was Chuck Knoll such a good coach?
He was a great leader, very intelligent. And he was big on he was a teacher. I mean, he let Terry Bradshaw call his own plays because his philosophy was he taught them during the week so they should know what plays to call. You know, instead of today, that's not heard of. Like, back in the day, if Seattle sends in that pass, the quarterback would have changed the call. You think Johnny Nice would throw the ball to the 1 yard line? Bart Starr, the ice ball, they're the one. Third down, no timeouts left. He goes to Lombardi and said, hey, I can run it in. He doesn't make it, the clock runs out, they lose. He said, go for it. That, you know. But now it's everything, you know, the quarterbacks are like robots, you know. But, And he was also big on, it's not my job to motivate you guys. You know, motivation, if you can't motivate yourself, well, five people will, that type of thing. And he was just they really respected him. He wasn't a glide-hander, that type of thing. And Guy Buffalo once said that he gives you the impression there are only three or four people in the world that are capable of talking football with him. And you were not one of them. But we'd also talk about stuff like whether or not they should have free tuition at the City College in New York or that, or the car companies buying up the trolley track cars in Los Angeles to get rid of the competition with the trolley cars. That he was very eclectic. He flew a plane, was in the fine wines. He did not work till midnight, but, you know, he left at a reasonable hour. He put the work in, that was enough. So, as I say, he was one of the best of all time.
Vito Stellino is with us from the Florida Times-Union. You then moved on to Baltimore. You covered the Colts for, a year, I guess. And then were you the one of the ones that broke the story of the team moving?
Yeah, well, I mean, I covered it. I'd covered it for 2 years. And it was March 28, 1984, and we started getting calls. Hey, there's all these movie trucks coming to the. So I was there that night as they started to leave, and that was such a surreal surreal moment. at that time, you hadn't had all these boobs. There hadn't been a lot of movement except for the Raiders. And the Raiders were kind of an outlier, you know.
Yeah, sure.
So it was just almost hard to believe, you know, that movie in the middle of the night, that type of thing. It was, and it was a sad thing because Baltimore is such a great football town. I mean, they haven't, since they got the team back, they haven't had a ticket not sold. Haven't had a game blacked out, that type of thing.
Sure.
And but Irsay just ruined the franchise. And so then I covered the Redskins the rest of the time until 95 when they came back, you know.
You were inducted into the Hall of Fame. I guess the Dick McCann Award winner, not truly inducted, but there's the Writers' Wing of the Hall of Fame in 89. Was that a goal of yours at some point, or did it just kind of happen?
I don't know that you set up a goal like that. I mean, you know, you do the work, and actually, I think part of the recognition was cover the Steelers. You know, you have to get noticed. In those days, there was no internet, that type of thing, no cable TV, and so that probably helped. And the year I won it, I was in the ballot with Will McDonough, who was very big on TV and a pioneer. And I didn't expect to win it myself. I was surprised, you know. But, yeah, it was quite an honor. I mean, you know, because you're being voted on by your peers. You know, it's the other writers vote on it. So it's kind of a humbling experience.
And McDonough won it the next year.
Yeah,
so you both got it.
And he won the next year. Well-deserved, you know. So that
Vito Stellino's with us. Let's talk Jacksonville now. You came here in 2001. There have been some up and down times here, more down than up for this franchise on the field, but let's stay away from the football side. In general, best story that you've been able to cover around the Jaguars since coming here?
Probably the sale of the team, I think, was the most interesting story,
yeah.
You know, because there hasn't been as much on the field stuff as you'd like, you know. But that was such a momentous shift. I mean, you had one owner all that time. You know, now you're getting a new owner, you don't know what it's going to be like, you know, and all that type of thing. So I would think that's probably been the biggest story since I've been here. And then, of course, all the changes he's made. And so it's been a very interesting time from that standpoint.
Vito, you're one of 46 on the selection committee for the Hall of Fame, an at-large voter. Of the Jacksonville guys, everybody talks about Pacelli and Taylor and maybe Jimmy Smith at some point. When is the first Jacksonville player going in, and who would that be?
Well, Baselli's the only one who's got a real chance. Fred, unfortunately, did not make a lot of Pro Bowls. He's got good numbers, maybe as a senior candidate, you know, who knows, but because he's up there in total yards. But he usually wasn't the best guy when he was playing year to year. There was a Tomlinson or a Bettis or, you know, somebody else. So that doesn't help. And, of course, the losing teams and small market and no Super Bowls. So, and then Jimmy lost 2 years at Dallas at the beginning and then probably retired a little early because of his problems. So he doesn't have the numbers, especially now with the – I always feel right receivers should be judged pre-78 and post-78 because now – catching 85 balls is not really a great accomplishment when you can't touch it behind the line of scrimmage.
Right.
I mean, a guy like Mel Blount, 6'5", 200, he could hit you until the ball was released. So you're 10 yards down the field, he's knocking you to the ground. Yeah, it was just a totally different game.
Sure.
You know, so, but Baselli should make it. In fact, I wrote a letter to the selectors recently, and I said, I used to think, hey, short career, it's ball market, no Super Bowls. It is what it is. It's going to be very, very tough. But then they brought up Terrell Davis. He got in the room. He played exactly the same number of years as Baselli did, had fewer Pro Bowls and all pros. And he got in the room. Didn't get elected. But once you get in that room, the odds are good in a succeeding year that you're going to get elected. So I said, we should at least have Baselli in the room to talk about it, you know. Because they had this crazy process. They don't let they had 50 people nominated. They didn't let you vote up or down on each guy. Okay. First they whittled to 10, then they whittled to 5.
And then you get to vote.
And then you vote on up or down. So, but if you don't get in the room, you never even talked about, so I said, this guy was on the team of the 90s, other people in his group on that team are in. You're considering Orlando Pace, and let's face it, he was better than Orlando Pace. I mean, you got to give Walter Jones his due and Willie Rolfe, those guys. But for maybe a 3-4 year period, he was considered the best of his time. He's up there with Ogden, those type of guys. So, but again, I mean, first thing I get is a guy emails, well, he played with a left-handed quarterback. So I'm like, come on. he started 3 more games than Dwight Stevenson, who's in.
That's right.
But it's going to be tough because, the small market, no Super Bowl, short career. I mean, the funny thing is, if they hadn't botched the surgery on his torn labrum, on his good torn labrum, they fixed the bad one, but they didn't. They didn't handle that well, and he couldn't play again. Had he played 5 more years, even on a mediocre basis, he'd be a lock. 10-year career, he was great,
Right.
But it's so hard to overcome the short career thing. So whether he'll make it or not. But he's really the only guy I think that's got a strong chance. And they're going to have to find some young guy, hopefully a Blake Bortles or something,
right?
That type of thing, But that's going to be, we're talking 15 years from now, and you got to start winning some Super Bowls, too. That's it's not a mandatory thing, but it's hard to get in without some championships.
Let's finish with this, Vito. Over your entire 50, now 51 years in the NFL, who was the best quote you got to go with?
Joe Greene, without a doubt. He was amazing. Noah wasn't much of a quote. We would go to him. We would almost treat him like the coach, because he would sum up the how the game went, And he was not into BS. He had a bad shoulder 1 year, and I went on Christmas Day. There was like nobody else there for practice, and they were alternating him by play with Steve Furness. So, it's like, well, maybe he'll get to play. I said, hey, Joe, you're looking pretty good. And he said, how would you know? And he didn't mean that as a put down. He meant, hey, don't give me that stuff. I know I'm not what I was. I'm hurt, that type of thing. But that's how honest he was, when they went to Oakland in 74, that was the week after the Sea of Hands game, Oakland, Miami. John Madden said these are the two best teams. So they get together Tuesday in the room. And Chuck Doe rarely gave any kind of speech, Rocky-type speech. He said, hey, the best football team in this league is right here in this room. And Joe Greene, leaps out of the chair, that type of thing. He loved that, And he was a tremendous team leader. He didn't really get recognized until he did the Coke commercial. For all that's a plane, he did. The Coke commercial made him an icon. He was the best as far as a quote. He threatened to punch an official.
How do we miss this story?
Well, because of those days,
right.
He got fined for it. But, he told me that I'm the only guy there. I don't have a tape recorder. He could have denied it. Next day, he was mad about some call. So, he didn't actually punch him. He said, I like to punch that guy. So I forget what it was, But he was a stand-up guy. Next day, he said, I said that. What he could have said, he took me out of context. I was just kidding, that type of thing. But he was that kind of a stand-up guy, just an amazing guy.
Two more. Best player you've seen in the National Football League.
Oh, wow. Joe Greene would be right up there.
You're a Joe Greene fan, apparently.
Yeah, he was amazing. They put in what they call a stunt 4-3, which for the 74 title game. He would play at an angle over Jim Otto, a Hall of Fame center. And in those days, it was film. They would go frame by frame. In one frame, he's in front of Otto. The next frame, he's past Otto. The film could not catch him. He was so quick. getting past him. So, I mean, he was he's right up there. I mean, you know, there's Jerry Rice. You know, there's some other guys. If you're going to call roll, it'd be a small class. He would certainly be a guy you'd consider.
And let's finish with this. You covered plenty of NFL games, of course. 40-something Super Bowls now, I think, 40 straight. But even in the UPI days, you covered events that weren't football, too. Fights in New York, Ollie Frazier, all this. What's the best single sporting event, the most exciting, biggest event that you were able to cover in your career?
It was probably Ollie Frazier, but because I wasn't into boxing, I really couldn't appreciate the but I was in the last row of the press area. It was like 50 rows deep, and so Ollie like walked right behind me because there was a space between before the fan seat started, you know, and that glazed look in his eye. And I had the alley sidebar. He got beat up and didn't appear after the thing. So in the big scope of things, that was probably the biggest event I covered because it was such an iconic moment, you know. But for me personally, it would have been Super Bowl 13. You had Pittsburgh, Dallas. They were going to play for the team of the decade on the field. There wasn't going to be a vote. They'd each won two Super Bowls. They each had a Hall of Fame coach, a Hall of Fame quarterback, a Hall of Fame running back, Hall of Fame defensive lineman, you know. And it was a tremendous game, 35-31. All the Steelers got ahead 35-17, and they got a couple late scores. But for drama and for so much on the line, all those, I mean, there must have been 15 Hall of Famers in the game, including the coaches. That was probably the biggest moment for me personally because, you know, I was covering the team and that type of thing.
Vito Stellino, writer for the Florida Times Union, your 51st year in the National Football League. We appreciate your time. Good to see you.
Hey, always good to chat with you. I love to reminisce. Of course, I always say, hey, I try not to do it too much because today's people, they don't want to hear what it was 30 years ago. You know, you got to live with the present. And I understand that. But
no, they're wrong. We want to hear about the past, Vito. We do. We appreciate it, man.
Well, thank you. Enjoyed it.